So last week, we just started talking about the different flavors of social media. We didn't quite call it that, but you started talking about the nuanced differences between Instagram and Facebook, which they're owned by the same company, but to me, they feel like entirely different products. Would you agree?
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, Instagram, you know, Facebook bought Instagram because it was becoming a dominant player. And
I mean, interestingly, and maybe relevantly, Instagram didn't really start life as a social media app as such. It was a photo sharing app. That's how it identified itself when it went live in the App Store, when Mike Krieger and Kevin Systrom made the app, said a photo sharing app. That was its purpose, not social media. Its purpose was share photos with your friends and family. So I guess, I mean, I see that as a very organic beginning for Instagram as opposed to Facebook, which was created as a social media tool.
But you know, what I think attracted Facebook to it, to actually buy it, was that it was different. And one thing that I think is really good is that they have kept it quite separate. They've not gone too much with integration. They haven't brought much stuff from Instagram over to Facebook or vice versa. They've nurtured it as its own independent platform. And that sort of rings true for the number of years that have come, because they even have separate campuses and in Palo Alto, and they are developing their specific features, you know, and pushing Instagram further into those new spaces and introducing stories and live and that sort of thing there, but consuming it in a different way than Facebook. And yeah, it's been, you know, like, I guess talking, I like to think of it as, you know, it is one of their products and they've made a good move by purchasing it. And I think that it has been great that they did, because it has allowed that platform to grow and develop into the powerhouse that it has become, that it might not have had the opportunity had Facebook not bought it or someone else bought it.
Yeah, well, I think your point about it starting as a photo sharing app is really an important one to remember, because the killer application of the app was filters, right? The ability to take this photo and then make it look better than you've ever been able to make a snapshot style photo ever before was really a very, very attractive to a very attractive demographic, which was younger people. Facebook has always tended to be a little bit more attractive to people college age or above. But Instagram was hugely popular with younger people, and by younger starting at age, you know, whenever people could fake their way onto it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it's, I think it's done well to also, you know, bring in those new features that have then kept that audience young and encouraged them to kind of interact in ways that they wanted to interact. They've adapted it well to the younger audience and the trends as well.
Well, and a lot of people think that if you're looking to convert business, Facebook is the place to be. But based on our conversations that we've had in the past, you, and when I say you, Fletch Digital, a small digital services agency based in Sydney, Australia, have seen significant conversion from awareness to interest to actual engagement with people who've discovered you based on your Instagram feed.
Yeah, that's right. Basically, all of our organic leads, as far as our business goes, come from Instagram. People will have discovered us there, or, you know, well, you've just seen some of our content, or maybe discovered us somewhere else, but they follow us on Instagram because that's where we spend most of our time. And they really get a sense of who we are from that, because our content themes are basically spread where we don't mind getting a bit personal on there as well. Not too personal, but...
Hi, Bubba.
Hi, River. Podcast,
the baby is in the room now.
River, how old is River now?
8 months.
8 months. Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Mom and Dad. What a cutie pie. So for you audio podcast listeners, let me just say the arrival of River Austin has, of course, stopped everything in its tracks, as we must say hello to that lovely little baby. However, we're also talking about how using Instagram has worked for Fletch Digital to attract attention, raise awareness, and ultimately convert into sales.
Yeah.
And I always rip on Todd and Alex because your strategy is actually smart. They actually hire a photographer to spend a number of hours with them a couple times a year. Is that right?
Yeah, we do it. We do it twice a year. And this year it might just be once because we're due to have a photo shoot now-ish and we won't do it for a little bit now.
We've been active in doing that because it's a photo sharing app at its core, you know, so having good photography is important.
And so what they do is they get together with a professional photographer who has a editorial eye or a lifestyle eye, and they come up with a number of situations, whether it's, hey, we're at an outdoor cafe, or I'm at my desk, I'm kicking back, I've got a coffee cup in my hand, some goofy shots of you guys jumping and high-fiving, you know, all that stuff. And again, I'm repeating some of the stories you've told me, like the jumping and high-fiving shot was so popular when people saw it. All these couples are now requesting for that specific photo from this photographer. So I'm going to call it the Austin. They all want the Austin and they request it, especially because they've seen it. I mean, come on. That's an indication of how compelling your content is. If someone sees it on Instagram and says, oh, I want that shot of me and my boyfriend or me and my husband or me and my fiance, whatever, you know you're doing it right. And so these photos are telling the story of Alex and Todd Austin, but also the story of Fletch Digital. And you don't even know you're being told a story, but you're seeing it. Yeah. They're showing a story. And the takeaway is, oh, these seem like really nice people. Oh, they're a little bit on the younger side of business. You know, they aren't wearing suits. They aren't all done up. Their office looks kind of light and airy and, dare I say, IKEA. You know, it feels very comfortable and familiar. And so you're getting phone calls because people are going, you know what? I want someone who's younger, who's smarter, who's a little bit hipper, who seems really nice and casual. I don't want formal. And they're choosing you before they ever have a first conversation because, and this is where I put on my flipping non-friction brand hat, because you're showing who you are, what you do, and how you do it via photos on Instagram.
Yeah. And I think that that's one of the keys. I mean, that's been the place where we've put most of our energy for our own marketing. And the only reason, I mean, the main reason that we've done it is to show what the possibilities are, what your content can look like if you use our service, you know, that we essentially replicate what we're doing there for another business, another brand, and we adapt personality of whoever it is or the business that it is right in that voice. But the thing is that we focus on is we make sure we get diverse content themes that aren't just about what products or services they offer. It's also about who the people are behind the business, why they are passionate about what they do. And then you delve into those areas in equal measures with the products and services, because when people choose to, you know, buy your product or buy your service, they're buying a little bit of brand. And if they feel like they have an affinity with that brand, then they're more likely to go ahead with it because they already feel like they've built a relationship. Or they feel like, you know, this person, this brand, this business understands who I am because I have similar interests, or I feel that way about something as well. And I think that that's what Instagram certainly allows us to convey those messages regularly and clearly through photography and you know, great copywriting.
This episode of the Nonfiction Brand Podcast is brought to you by Nonfiction Brandversity. It's a free Facebook group dedicated to the art and craft of personal branding. And we'd like to invite you. Just search Nonfiction Brandversity on Facebook and ask to join. You're in, guaranteed. I can't wait to see you on campus.
And I think just on, like, sort of bring it back to social media world, something that we talked a lot about this year, talked a lot about last year, authenticity, storytelling, like telling your story. So that's a massive theme of social media marketing because it's what we're all striving for on social media. And at the conference, I made a note of something Miri Rodriguez, to say apparently, said in her presentation. She said, let's not confuse authenticity with a type of emotion. And I thought that that was so relevant to right now, because you get to be as much of your authentic self as you want to be on social media. So when we're talking authenticity, it doesn't mean that you need to give 100% of yourself or 100% of your information or your story. You don't need to give all of it on social media to be an authentic marketer on social media.
Yeah, well, especially in these days that politically, especially here in the United States, are challenging.
Right.
It's some people, especially my daughters, will claim that if they can't share everything that they're doing the moment that it's happening, that you're censoring them or whatever. And I'm like, I'm not censoring anything from you, but I am trying to protect you from things that could be potentially not positive, because the internet is forever. And if you want to see that in action, we're in the midst of a presidential campaign right now. And if you think opposition research people aren't diving deep into every candidate's social media to discover what they said about anything, you're wrong. So I always look at it as, you know, the definition of character is doing the right thing even when no one's watching or whatever. That's social media, which is always do the right thing, because even though no one may be watching, that won't always be true. And they'll be able to go back and discover a whole lot of things about you that you may not have wanted to share had you been less everything and a little bit more strategically authentic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So what were your big takeaways from this year's social media marketing world?
Well, I think it was interesting this year as well, because I think one of the key, I guess, themes, certainly that came from Michael Stelzner's keynote, and I think that his keynote is probably the overarching, you know, sets the tone for what the conference is about. And he builds it out of the research that they run throughout the year to their audience, which is huge. And I think this year was particularly interesting because it kind of was similar to last year. It was talking about video and live video, right, which was the key themes, but that was at the surface value. But the deeper message was that we're not just making video and making lives and that's, you know, that's going to work for us. And maybe that did just hitting the live button and, you know, hitting record on the video worked, over the last 12 months. But really right now, with the way that social media is, with so much content, there's so many different platforms, there's so many avenues for people to consume content. The only way that you're able to cut through it all is become a storyteller. And when I understood that message, you know, partway through Michael Stelzner's keynote, I was like, yes, that we feel we've evolved enough that we're not just, well, I mean, us as social media marketers and you as well as a copywriter, you know that the message that people are looking for is not always, it's not always a call to action. It's not always, this is the product or this is the service. It's the story behind a product or a service or a person or a brand now is what people are actually getting drawn to. And I think that for me, that becoming that marketers and businesses and brands as well. And I think that our job now as marketers or social media marketers is to encourage our clients, encourage businesses and brands to allow themselves to become storytellers. And that's the challenge that we face at the moment. But I think it's the, you know, it's one of the key things that we're going to need to be doing.
I think that's a fantastic takeaway because it's very true. My beef has always been that people talk about storytelling, and they never explain it enough so that people do exactly what you did, which was, oh, light bulb goes off. And I like to not call it storytelling. I like calling it showing or demonstrating, again, who you are, what you do, and how you do it by doing it. You're telling your story, and your Instagram feed is telling the story of Alex and Todd Austin and Fletch Digital, which is why it's so compelling and interesting to people.
I will just say, before I have to take him away, I will just say one of my big takeaways this year was sometimes, you know, there really is a sense of content overwhelm. You know, there's a lot of content and there's a lot of pressure to produce a lot of content. There were some really good sessions this year. Mel Diesel, really great session about not overproducing content, not overworking yourself to produce content. And, you know, I guess that's much more drilled down to a specific thing rather than the broader storytelling. But I felt like it was a great takeaway. I think it was Rory Vaden said, if you have diluted focus, you get diluted results.
Yeah.
I think that was a really important takeaway for me. I think just concentrating on one thing at a time and making sure that the hours that you do spend working are working as much for you as you are for them, you know, making sure that you're able to get as much out of the time that you put in as you possibly can.
No, that's really great too. I chalk that up to the fewer better. Do fewer things, but do it better.
Yes.
A lot of the takeaways you guys, you know, took back to Australia, I took the same ones back to Wisconsin. I mean, if anything, some things were reconfirmed in my mind, which is find the things that suit you individually, the styles, you know, because not everyone's going to be good on live streams. If you're not good at it, don't try to make yourself good at it. That said, don't let the first one that didn't go well put you off on it. Do at least 10.
Yes.
And then decide, you know what? It's not my jam. I don't really feel it. I don't want to do it. Cool. What do you like to do?
Because that's so important, isn't it? Just not just doing something once and thinking, I don't like that. Nobody likes doing anything first. You know, I know Brené Brown has spoken about that a lot, the first time kind of fear that you have to actually push through to then decide whether you do or do not actually like doing something or want to do something.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And I just want to focus a bright, hot spotlight on what you just said, which was don't let the fear stop you from doing it. And for me, it's like burn the fear out of you and then decide, you know what? I really don't like it, so I'm not going to do it, but I'm not afraid of it.
That's it. Yeah.
Hey, nonfiction branders, did you know I wrote a book? Well, I did, and it's called Rotoma, the ROI of Social Media Top of Mind. I wrote it with my colleague Spencer X. Smith, and it's all about Rotoma, an acronym that means Return on Top of Mind Awareness. Best-selling author and NYU Stern School of Business professor Scott Galloway called it a book that starches the fluff from social media and helps managers allocate capital and find the unicorn among unicorns, ROI. And Chief Content Officer at Marketing Profs, Anne Hanley said, this isn't just a practical way to think about the return on social media. It's also a spot-on, accurate way to reframe your social efforts. Check out all the 5-star reviews on Amazon by searching Rotoma, ROTOMA. Pick up your copy today and start building your personal, professional, and small business brand the Rotoma way.
You know, the other thing I just wanted to point out and ask you about is the first year I went to Social Media Marketing World, it was, I want to say, around 40% Facebook. The next year, it was about 25% Facebook. This year, it was about 7% Facebook. I mean, seriously, and as a exercise myself, I've got all 3 years programs. I want to go through and count them so I can put a number to these things to kind of prove it to myself. But there's been a massive shift away from, you know, the things talked about at Social Media Marketing World, from being very, very Facebook focused to Facebook was at the kids' table during this discussion, you know?
Yeah.
You know, did you feel that as well?
Yeah, I did. I also thought there was more variation this year, 2020, than there ever has been before, I think.
Yeah.
There was more generalized social media content rather than specifically for Facebook or Instagram, whatever. And yeah, there was definitely, Facebook was at the kids' table. I love that. I love that phrase. And I definitely would agree with that. There was some session times where there wasn't a Facebook session on.
Yeah.
Which was unheard of. And a big jump from 2019.
Yeah.
Even though 2019 was less. Yeah.
This
was
I think you're right. I think there were a lot of strategic sessions that were more about strategic things that apply to Facebook, that apply to Instagram, that apply to Snapchat, that apply to you name it, whatever, LinkedIn. Yeah, TikTok, exactly. TikTok. I mean, TikTok was kind of the flavor of the day that those people who needed to chase the shiny object were talking about the most. But a lot of people were doing what I frankly like to do best, which is forget about the channel. Think about the first principle that channel is trying to serve. You know, Instagram, telling stories via image, you know, live streams, telling rougher or demonstrating rougher production value that has more value because of its perceived freshness. you know, YouTube, edited YouTube videos require a degree of sophistication you'll never expect from a live stream. But that live stream has value because it feels like it's farm fresh. It just came out of the chicken, you know?
I think that's really interesting that you raise that, because that's one of the things that I've sort of been thinking about over the last 6 months, is that people get so caught up in the platforms and I need to be on this platform of on Instagram. I need to be on, you know, whatever. The thing is what we're doing is we're communicating with an audience, and it's too easy to get caught up in the tools that we're using and forget that you really need to be focusing on, or, you know, what you should be focusing on is making connection. And the tools are, you know, and I say tools, I mean Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and LinkedIn, whatever it may be, they're tools. Your audience is a person that is sitting out there waiting for you to reach out to them and inspire them or encourage them. And that's what I think people are forgetting, that each like, each follower is a real person, a real human person that has thoughts and feelings and emotions and is just waiting for you to inspire them.
Well, and that would be a huge takeaway, which is if you're developing any type of piece of content, you know, a photo, a post, a tweet, whatever, direct it toward one specific person. I mean, literally have their face in your mind as you do it, because that person will be at the center of the dartboard, if you will, you know, right at that bullseye. That doesn't mean it doesn't apply to the entire dartboard. It just means it's incredibly specific and therefore valuable. I don't know about you, but on Twitter, I watch a lot of conversations going on that I never participate in, but it's between two people that I respect and have learned to appreciate what they bring to the table. You know, I'm kind of that guy sitting there with a drink at the cocktail party, not saying anything, but truly enjoying what I'm seeing happen. And by the way, that's the majority of people on social media. You've heard the numbers before. 90% of people online are lurkers, 9% are likers, and only 1% actually creates anything of value via posts, videos, live streams, whatever. You can be part of that 1% just by getting off your butt and getting out there. And I know someone who is doing that, and his name is Todd Austin, and he has a podcast called The Good Social Media Podcast. Todd, where can people hook up and listen to an episode of The Good Social Media Podcast?
So The Good Social Media Podcast is on all the streaming platforms or your favorite podcast app. And you can find me on Instagram. That's where I hang out at Good Social Podcast. And the website is goodsocialpodcast.com.
And the correct title, I keep saying The Good Social Media Podcast, it's The Good Social Podcast, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, it floats between those two areas. But it's good Social Podcast is the name, but it's all about but social media.
If you're looking for the title, it's The Good Social Podcast with Todd Austin and the lovely and talented River Austin, who you can hear a little bit in the background. Let me get a photo. Hold him up. What a cute family. I mean, I love you guys, and I really enjoy seeing you every year at Social Media Marketing World. I'm delighted to find out you're going to be going to 2021, as am I, you know, fingers crossed, and the COVID gods allow us out of our hovels.
Yeah.
But I really am looking forward to seeing you guys again. Thanks so much for being on the podcast. Once again, I'm DP Knutton for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast, and they are
Todd and Alex Austin from Sydney, Australia.
Thank you for having us on the podcast again, DP.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. And of course, a very special cameo performance by the lovely and the talented River Austin, 8 months old and bound to conquer the world any day now. That's it for the Nonfiction Brand Podcast. I'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.